The Science Inside Podcast.
This is The Science Inside.
Hello and welcome to The Science Inside. I am your host, Bridget Lebere, and welcome to the new month of June. I think I can safely say that winter has officially arrived, and we will be putting on extra layers of clothing to, you know, just shelter ourselves away from the cold. But now, with this being the new month, every month here on The Science Inside, we also feature a scientist who is doing exceptional work within their field of expertise. So every first Monday of a new month, we give that particular science a face. And this month is no exception. We will be chatting with Nkululeko Thunzi, born and bred in Soweto, Dube. He attended both his primary and high schooling in Soweto, but he also went to the Tshwane University of Technology's SOSH campus to further his studies in computer science. And now he is here at Tshimologong Digital Innovation Precinct, where he's working from the Red Bull Base Camp premises on his current project. Now, the reason we have him here in our studio with us is that he has invented a really awesome gadget, guys. He has invented an innovative walking stick that aids blind people to navigate around their spaces with much ease. The walking aid is called Bula Tsela, meaning make way. It uses the art of artificial intelligence and machine learning features, which are meant to interpret the surroundings of that particular individual who's doing the walking with the stick. So what it does essentially is it detects objects and any other obstacles that are surrounding this person, and then it creates an alternative direction for the person to move in, and then gives the blind person feedback. I think this is a very novel and noble thing that he has done, and a great relief to see that, you know, scientists and other people are mindful of people with disabilities and people who are physically or visually impaired. And I think this is really inspiring. I believe this is going to make a great change in the way that blind people move around their spaces. I'm sure they'll put this device to great use. And I know this is very exciting, and just like me, you want to hear more from Nkululeko about him and his device. But before we do that, firstly, we will do what we usually do. We get into the news.
This week's science headline.
My name is Kempe Sharima, and we're getting to the news. In the news making headlines this week, UP prepares for the fourth industrial revolution as it employs a robot to help students in libraries. And in our second story, Huawei South Africa has launched the first free 5G training for postgraduates at Wits University. The University of Pretoria has embraced the fourth industrial revolution wave by digitizing their library assistants. UP's Department of Library Services has employed the first client service robot known to be in use in any university library in Africa. Libby, as she is called, is a robot originally from China that weighs about 19 kilograms and is 90 centimeters tall, a height tall enough to also interact with visitors in wheelchairs. She has an array of over 60 sensors, cameras, and software integrations that enable her to receive and process various commands and requests from students using the command language of English. She also comes with a tablet integrated on her chest area for manual input. Her brain is connected to Watson, IBM's question-answering computer system, which processes queries directed at Libby. She runs off Android-based software connected to the online via Wi-Fi, which enables her to send information back and forth so she can answer queries or process data from the servers she is able to carry out. Libby, however, is also wired to perform social and entertaining tasks such as dancing and playing music, all for a light pat on the head. The robot Libby started working at UP's Merensky Library on the Hatfield campus on Tuesday, the 28th of May, 2019. The Department of Library Services claims Libby is not a threat to anyone's job, but she's merely part of the library's innovative progress. This dedicated service robot will only perform general repetitive tasks that staff perform around the library, thereby releasing them to perform more advanced and specialized services. The department funded Libby in partnership with a reputable Johannesburg-based company that assembled and shipped her domestically. UP and its Mayensky 2 library are the first university and universal library in Africa to make use of a dedicated client-facing robot. As part of their reliable feedback loop, the libraries also formed focus groups with students on what they would like to see or experience in interactions with the robot. An internal team of staff has also been identified to oversee Libby's daily operations. In our second story, Huawei South Africa launched a free 5G training program for postgraduate students at Wits University and University of Pretoria. The course is part of the Huawei ICT Talent Ecosystem Program, which was designed to encourage the growth and support of ICT skills training in South Africa. Following this launch, the tech company plans to extend the program to the rest of the country. The Deputy Vice Chancellor of Research at Wits, Professor Ziblon Vilakazi, who also spoke at the launch ceremony, explained how this collaboration came to be.
Partnership with Huawei can be seen in the same context as partnerships we've had with many other tech companies, IBM and so on and so forth. And it happens here that Huawei have had an interest in doing an experimental test in one of our small laboratories to see whether, you know, just dedicate a small room to see whether we can just do a prototype test of this. And running parallel with that, of course, was the interest to start a nationwide process. Wits and University of Johannesburg, and I think Pretoria, I'm not sure about that, are among the first universities to actually have the training program in 5G. As you know, 5G is similar to opening up a new motorway. You've moved from one, second and third, and now we're going to the 5G technologies, which will mean that a new spectrum, a new motorway for information passage will be opened. But that requires the understanding of the various network protocols to manage that this technology. I don't think it's mostly for postgraduates. It's aimed at senior undergraduates and obviously postgraduates, because that will be very important for their research and their preparation for implementation of this technology.
With Huawei being acknowledged as one of the global leaders in groundbreaking 5G technology, this could be seen as the key to the fourth industrial revolution. For South Africa, the expansion of this technology and knowledge could bring tremendous benefits to the technological advancement of the country as well as the economy. Professor Vilakazi explains what this 5G training program could mean for Wits and South Africa at large.
This partnership came about because of Wits's goal of making sure that by 2022 we have graduates who are prepared for the new knowledge economy, and the work starts now. That's in preparation for the challenges of the digital information era, or you call it the fourth industrial revolution. It starts with ensuring that we equip our graduates with the latest acquisition of skills and access to technologies to make it easier for them to become effective participants.
According to the Deputy CEO of Huawei, Qian Chen, research shows that about 70% of all jobs by 2020 will have an ICT component, which puts this program ahead of the curve by equipping the youth of South Africa. This is expected to contribute significantly towards the country's development goals. Recapping your stories this hour, UP prepares for the fourth industrial revolution as it employs a robot to help students in libraries. And Huawei South Africa has launched the first and free 5G training for postgraduate students at Wits University. This week's news stories were sourced from the BBC, News 24 and SABC News. I'm Kampion Jarima, and that is all for our news desk.
Really invigorating stories there. Talk about tech working for you, and I'm sure our guests here in the studio can identify with those stories, because they are all tech based. And you know, with artificial intelligence featuring there in that first story on Libby.
Absolutely. I never thought this would happen anytime soon.
Yeah, especially for South Africa and at a university, no
yes.
less. Yeah. I know that one of the banking companies, they have one of these assistive robots. But I'm not really sure about, you know, when they say that, oh, they're not going to take anybody's job. Yes, they are, because they're replacing somebody's job. I mean, somebody was supposed to be greeting people who's maybe the reception or the admin person. They're not there anymore.
Yeah, well, banks are basically, they're very tech-intensive firms, and they operate on very systemized everything. So I'd expect that to happen in banks. But in terms of like library, libraries, I think it's pretty tricky. But when it comes to taking out jobs, I think it also depends on the number of machines we're employing and using in these institutions. But for one, I think it's a safe number. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, maybe they could just give it a job to pack those books or something. Yeah, and the Huawei story, I'd have to say nice move by Huawei. I mean, given the, you know, stories that made the rounds and, you know, with Huawei might be losing clientele, I think it was a smart move by bringing in this 5G technology program and advancing the South African communities.
Absolutely. Well, Huawei has been leading in 5G technology, and it's been a race for the Western countries versus China anyways. But in this case, I think they've really, really done us a great favor, because 5G technology is not that common in Africa, not even to mention South Africa.
Yes.
So by them giving us a free course, I mean, this is free after all. This is groundbreaking technological news. I'm looking forward to this and seeing what it brings for the country and the youth of South Africa.
Well, let us return after the break.
This is Science Headline. You're listening to The Science Inside, bringing you science around major news events.
Welcome back. You're still with The Science Inside. And as promised, in studio tonight, we have computer scientist from the Tshwane University of Technology. He's also an entrepreneur who has designed and developed a walking aid for blind people to help them navigate and walk around with much ease. And this walking aid uses artificial intelligence to inform the user of obstacles that may be along their path and sort of give them information so that they can avert danger. Good evening, Nkululeko. A very warm welcome to The Science Inside.
Oh, evening. Great to be here. Thanks for the invite. Means a lot.
First of all, I'd like to say congratulations on achieving what you have achieved so far. I know you are in the process of working things out, but I'd like you to tell me more about this concept, how it came about, and let's take it from there.
How it happened is that there was a day I was on my way to work. At that time, I was still doing my internship. So I saw this lady standing on the traffic lights for some time, for about 2 minutes to 3 minutes. So while I was waiting for the bus to fill up, so she stood there on the traffic lights. She was blind. She couldn't cross. And then no one helped her. And then I asked myself, how can someone be standing on the traffic lights for so long, and while there are people? So from there, I did a little bit of research on what are existing walking aids in the market. And then I saw that, okay, with the technology that I have, at based whereby I can use to prototype, I built then a prototype into from 2016. And then I started there. Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying the studies that you went into, they essentially gave you the information and the know-how on how to develop this device that you have been working on?
Okay, so the device, it's more of playing around with different technologies, okay? And then from there, when you see a particular technology, you think about how can I use it further. So when I did my research and said, okay, how can I make it easier and unique? And then I used like existing technology. At that time, it was my school resources. It's more of looking at what can I use at the current moment, and then from there, just take it from there and grow.
And what have you found with the current walking sticks? Do they have any technological assistance or artificial intelligence assistance incorporated in them? What makes your aid so unique? Because I only know about just the stick that doesn't have any tech attached to it. But what have you found during your research?
So there are existing walking aids that have sensors. You know, some have single sensors, some have double sensors.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was I need more details than just one sensor. It was mainly the minute I'm approaching an obstacle, it will only do vibrations and vibrate at a certain level based on the distance.
Just like a car, really?
Yes.
Some of the new cars that we have. How cool is that?
Yes, you know, such technology. But you find that you can get a sensor that you can play around with and then see how much you can use it in whatever project. So from there, that's how then it came to that point whereby with what I have, Let me see what I can use. So with the existing ones, they have some have single sensors and some have double sensors. Some are more advanced that you, when you look at it, they were way more expensive, you know, to implement. There've been some cool research lately whereby you can embed a chip in your eye. So that when you look at it in our context, it's not a situation whereby someone can afford, mm-hmm. you know. So yeah, it was more about getting something that would be helpful and making it accessible. Yeah.
Wow, awesome. I like the fact that you are thinking about the costs implied, because it's not a stick for you, it's a stick for the people who are going to be making use of it. But would you know what the price range would be like, maybe?
So with technology, you cannot predict the price. Currently, we're on our early stages. We've still been doing more research. I mean, where we started, it was from, we've been having 3 prototypes now.
Okay.
So you see now the changes that happening with the changes in the industry on the technology. You tend to see how can it be incorporated. So price-wise is not quite easy to tell right now,
mm-hmm.
because we're still on R&D. So the next step is to try to come up with a much more cheaper and more reliable project, also product, you know.
And then you said you started the prototype in 2016, right?
Yes.
And with that being said, I'd like to find out then, how far are you with the process of, you know, you have it on paper, 3 prototypes, as you have mentioned before. Is it going to go into the market anytime
yeah.
soon? You know, those are the kind of details I'm looking for.
All right. So now, based on the journey that I've been through,
mm-hmm.
I've realized that at the first prototype, it was, can it be done? Yes, it can be done. So now the second one was more of, how can we now make it look more appealing? So at that time, it was a bit bigger. You know, it looked like a toy. It didn't make sense to someone who didn't understand what it does.
Mm-hmm.
Someone would think, maybe it's just a toy I'll play with. So then after the Red Bull Basement program, there's been a lot of good influences around the shaping the product. So it was more now coming up with a practical solution and see then how far we can get. So with the current one, what's nice is that we can do testing now.
Mm-hmm.
It's small enough to do testing. It's small enough to borrow someone who's blind in the hood or wherever, and just to say, try it out and see what feedback we get. So currently we want to do testing. We haven't done testing in like all these prototypes because of the changes and the technology we come across. The first one we didn't do 3D printing, so the second one and the third one, that's when we started to apply 3D printing. So 3D printing helps us to shape the product in whatever way we want to change and tweak it there and there. Like I said, we're still on R&D, so it's not quite easy to tell right now to say, do we really need to push it now? You want to make something better and not something whereby it will have a lot of faults. Secondly, we are looking to work with professionals like doctors, people who train blind people, so that they can give us more knowledge around their navigation dynamics and incorporate that so that we build something people can get the best way out of it.
This is heartwarming. Campion, do you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to find out. So you talked about how this has been tested throughout. I just wanted to know who has been giving the feedback on how usable the product is or is going to be.
We haven't got it to a stage where we get a blind person to use
okay.
it. The reason was that because of the shape and the size before. So now we're in a position whereby we can, it's small enough that we can give it to someone. So our next goal now is to get that person who we can work with and start to do testing. Preferably, we want to do it with professionals, you know, at a goal,
mm-hmm.
rather than just having someone randomly, because they will tell us based on what they feel. But if you get a professional, then we'll get a more scientific thing to say, this is how it works. What if we incorporate something that may affect their body structure, or, you know, their sensory feelings or something? You know, if will it disturb them during their navigation when they are walking in the streets, because they're paying too much attention to what the robot tells them compared to, you know, balancing both the device and the surrounding. We consider things like the how they navigate currently using sound, using feelings, you know, their foot. So we want to build something that can complement that instead of taking that away, you know. Mm-hmm. So testing is what we're currently looking into, especially with professionals. So we've been having a little bit of challenge to get into that,
yeah,
but hopefully we will get there.
And as far as testing, have you thought as far as how you're going to be rolling out the program of testing it out? Is it going to be like a clinical kind of trial set up, or how is it going to look like?
Okay, at a starting point, we're looking to have like a center where we can say, you know, this is where we'll train, especially if it's in a controlled environment.
Sure.
And then from there, we will expand and say, let's go out to the real world now. It's better when you go out to the real world where they know how to use it. Then by the time they know how to use it, tend to understand what are the challenges when it comes to in a real life environment. Things like, you know, it's too much people in the street. Is the system responsive enough? You know, mm-hmm. does it detect the number of cars that it sees accurately, or, you know, to check those things. So as a starting point, we're looking to get a clinical environment where we can be set up and just control the environment. We need a controlled environment more than at the early stages.
Great. Well, I'm just blown away by this. I really can't believe this is happening this soon. I mean, this is awesome. But apparently your interest in IT, it happened by chance, really. Tell me about it.
So when I was young, I wanted to be a vet, you know. Mm-hmm. So because I realized, okay, I love animals personally, so I used to experiment. I used to capture spiders and put them in a bottle and just check their behavior. And, you know, at home we've got pigeons, we've got dogs, so basically I take care of them. So if I had a spider, I know pigeons have got some flies and insects that you can find there, so I'll take them and feed the spider.
Mm-hmm.
And then just see the behavior. So I wanted to be a vet, so I realized cost-wise, you know, financially, to be a challenge. So then I thought of being a pilot. So my brother used to feed me a lot with aviation books, and then I would read, I would get inspired by aviation. And then I also realized the easiest way, if I were to get to aviation, I would have to go to the military. And
yeah,
at that time I was not that ready, mm-hmm. for that. So, but upon my research, I found that being a pilot also helps with having a qualification in IT. So that's when I was like, okay, cool, maybe that in the near future can tap into that. Then I went to our ITUT, applied for IT, I qualified. But then because of the environment that didn't like at that time, I moved to engineering. That's when a lot of things changed and I saw things in a different way. Yeah.
So is it the learning environment that you didn't like, or the course itself?
No, I didn't even do the course itself.
Okay.
It was during orientation week, you know. People say, these are the number of students in IT, and when you look, it's about a lot of numbers.
Yeah.
And then when they talk about the other course, computer systems, by the way, not computer science.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes. So, yeah, when they say computer systems engineering, and then with the 80 people, and then so much difference.
Yeah.
And then I did a little bit of research, what is really in there. That was quite cool. And then I found out, okay, it was more demanding. You needed more marks to get into it, and at that time I qualified because I got a distinction in maths and physics in high school. So I qualified, then I got in, just jumped to the course. Then first day, I got things, I was like, where was all this hiding? You know, so yeah.
So you really, really enjoyed the course?
Very, very, very much. Yeah.
Your journey seems very interesting to me, and there's a little bit of a back and forth in trying to rediscover or discover yourself, basically. I just want to know how your family felt about this whole journey you took. Were they supportive, or were they also confused at some point? What really happened?
Yeah, there was a bit of confusion, you know, especially during orientation week, or already I'm changing a course. Mm. So they didn't really know what other course did I take. The only thing I said is just, no, I changed the course, I'm no longer into IT. only to find out later and said, no, what I'm doing is still IT, but incorporated with electrical engineering and electronics. So it was like, okay, cool. So they were a bit confused, seeing me with some toolbox, you know, having all my equipment and practical things. So, yeah, they were supportive. They didn't say, no, we shouldn't have. They just said, no, as long as you're doing what you want. And, okay, that was the start of it, yeah.
Okay.
And tell me about the Red Bull program. How did you get involved in that program?
I saw an ad online about Red Bull Basement, where they wanted like tech for good, you know, social innovation project. So then I did a research and checked out how to get in. Then I filled in the application form, explained what the project does, and then I got accepted. So from there, we were assigned a mentor, our coaches. We were assisted with getting the minimal resources we needed to move to the next stage. We had sessions, workshops, where we learned more about, you know, apart from building stuff, about running a business, how you can grow, you know, and then based on the stage you're in. And then that's how they encouraged us. That's what we learned also. So, yeah, it was great. Good influence, you know. Sometimes I think about if I wasn't the Red Bull Basement, you know, how would have certain things happened. Sometimes I realize that you need certain things that will push you. So I think for the Red Bull Basement, it was more of pushing new boundaries. I didn't expect to get to that stage, but it happened so quick.
You've come a long way.
Yeah, like, there now I'm in the stage where I wanted to be. So, yeah, getting feedback from other people is important. Even though they'll criticize and you'll feel bad and say, nah, it's taking me for granted. No, it's okay. It's a learning curve. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the prospects of getting into business, was it something that you always wanted to pursue?
Not really. You know, when I'm alone, sometimes I think about things I used to do and then try to relate with what I'm doing now. So I remember back in primary school, they used to sell chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll play, because it was hot at that time, I didn't have a place to keep, so I just brought it in a plastic and put it in a water bottle filled with water.
Yeah.
So the water would just keep it cool.
Oh, you are always so innovative in your thinking. Wow.
So, yeah, while we were playing there, and then someone said, I want a chocolate. And so, no, I'm selling it. So at that time, you know, I didn't take it serious. You know, I was just doing for the sake of being a child, you know.
Yeah.
So I think I was, you know, but I didn't realize it. That, you know, maybe was into business and science.
All of your loves coming together as one.
Yeah.
So if you missed it, you can still find whatever that we spoke on earlier on during the show on Facebook. We are Vow FM. You can also tweet us at Vow FM, hashtag Science Inside. And our WhatsApp line is 084-087-4912. So we still have Nkululeko Tunzi with us, but as you would have it, on the Science Inside, we always have Unscience, and we are going to take a little break, and then after the break, we get into Unscience.
This is the Science Inside.
It's that time of the show, which many of us love. Well, I love it because it's, you know, silly, it's quirky, sometimes it's just downright hilarious. And as many times on the Science Inside, we bring you the information around science and tech, and we find something really interesting to talk about on Unscience. And this week's Unscience was produced by Campion Zarima.
Unusual, unlikely, Unscience.
First of all, let me say I'm very fascinated by strange ocean creatures that live in the waters. But today I'd like to talk about a jellyfish. And I'm sure you've seen what it looks like before, right?
Yeah, a couple of times. And yeah, it's an interesting creature.
So would you know how to describe it, or should I do it for you?
Go ahead.
Okay, so this is complicated. Brace for it. So this creature has no eyes, no ears, no nose, no brain or heart. They don't even have a head or muscles, no mouth, no blood, no stomach, and no reproductive organ. But it stings with poison, and it's just by mere contact. Also, it's transparent.
So how is it alive if it doesn't have anything that characterizes something that's alive? Because, I mean, it's basically a plant.
Well, it is an animal. Actually, I'll give you the scientific description of this creature.
Sure,
right?
Go ahead.
So jellyfish are invertebrates, which means they don't have a spine. But together with corals and other animals, they belong to a group called the cnidarians, which is a group of animals that have stinging cells, which they use to both capture their prey and also as a form of defense. And these cells contain a capsule in the interior, which actually is rolled up in a firmament and contains poison. And if a prey animal makes contact with the surface of the jellyfish, the capsule opens and the filaments are ejected and stick into the prey, injecting their poison.
Did you say they are spineless? So are you saying those spineless human beings, we can call them you jellyfish?
I'm sure they'd really take offense with that.
But why are they transparent?
It's actually because their body is 95% water, which means they are perfectly camouflaged. And the body of a jellyfish is divided into three parts. So there's the umbrella part, the oral arms, which are around the mouth, and the mouth in quotes, by the way, and the stinging tentacles. So they have an internal cavity which in which digestion is carried out, and it has a single aperture which carries out the functions of both the mouth and the anus.
Okay, I'm still not convinced how this thing is still an animal, because, I mean, there are so many of them in the ocean.
Absolutely.
But how do they reproduce?
Oh, yeah, that's actually another strange part. So the jellyfish have separate sexes, which means they have a male and female jellyfish.
Hold on, in one jellyfish?
No, it's
okay.
Actually separate.
All right.
So there's a male and the female jellyfish. But for them to reproduce, the males and females release sperms and eggs into the water, which is the sexual reproduction. And after fertilization, they develop larvae, which give rise to new jellyfish, or which settle down on the sea bottom as polyps, which are the little ones. And from these polyps, by means of asexual reproduction, which means there's no sexual contact, the new free-living jellyfish may develop.
No wonder they are spineless. I mean, they're not great parents either.
Absolutely.
But how do they arise, and where do they live, and, you know, those things?
So jellyfish are inhabitants of the tropical seas and of the cold waters of the Arctic. So you can be rest assured that you won't find them anytime soon if you don't move out of South Africa. But they have been there for over 650 million years. And jellyfish are pelagic animals, which means they live in open seas. And although they can propel themselves, they basically move at the mercy of the currents of the sea.
Gosh, dipilelang, what do they live for? What do they eat? I mean, it seems like literally they just love to eat.
I've
never heard of any great thing that a jellyfish has done apart from stinging people.
Well, they do eat, and it's funny that you bring that up. They are carnivores and can increase in size rapidly and create a large number of individuals when food is abundant. However, if food is scarce, they can become smaller. And these animals have a very unsophisticated anatomy, which is nevertheless very effective. And they feed mainly on zooplankton, small crustaceans, although some small fish and other jellyfish also form part of their diet. And it is strange to see a jellyfish let its prey inside its body before it is digested, because they are transparent, so you can actually see the food inside it when it's digesting.
Okay, great. I want us to skip to the part where I've been told many times that if you're stung by a jellyfish, somebody needs to urinate on you. So I want you to just skip to that part, because I want to learn, is this true? Is it effective?
Well, first of all, that's a lie. It won't help. Trust me, it won't. But I can tell you what to do in case you've been attacked by a jellyfish.
Mm-hmm.
So, three main points. First one is, if there's a large number of jellyfish in coastal waters, the beach should be closed for at least 24 hours, taking precautions even if the jellyfish are abundant at some distance from the coastline. And the second is, if a jellyfish is seen in the water, it is better to not take any risks, even if it's some distance off, as with the action of the waves, its tentacles can break off and the cells in the floating fragments will remain active. And what is more, and is necessary, is to advise bathers who are not familiar with these organisms that they should not touch them, even if they appear to be dead. And lastly, jellyfish should not be touched in the sand, even though they appear to be dead. So the stinging cells remain active for a period of time. Even walking along the water's edge can be dangerous, as there are many remains of tentacles in the sand. It is necessary for a period of a day's sun to deactivate the stinging cells located in the fragments.
Can one die?
Actually, you can. It's very possible to die from a jellyfish sting. So, yeah.
Yeah, you just gave me the shock of my life, because some time back while I was in high school, I think, there was a jellyfish lying on the floor and I was prodding it and poking it, and everybody kept on saying, don't do it. But I'm sure it was dead for some time. That's why, hey, I'm still here, right?
Yeah, you're alive. We're talking in the studio, so that means you must have survived.
Wow, that was unusual, unlikely, unscience. And next up, we get up close and personal with Nkululeko Dunzi after the break.
Unusual, unlikely, unscience. Stay curious, stay informed, stay on the Science Inside.
You're still on the Science Inside, and welcome back. Earlier on, we were having a chat with Nkululeko Dunzi, who is a computer systems graduate from TUT, and now we were talking about his work and the device that he has developed, and then he has also mentioned that they have 3 prototypes right now, and very soon, actually, we might see his product in stores where blind people will have access to this really amazing walking aid that will help them to see better. But right now, we are getting up close and personal, and we want to hear more about the man behind the science. So welcome back, Nkululeko.
Yeah, thanks.
So, yeah, we want to get up close and personal. I know that your first choice was to be a vet and you headed to TUT, but what about those aspirations of, you know, becoming a vet or maybe pursuing veterinary sciences?
What about those?
Yes.
Okay, so personally, you know, I love animals from since a very young age. So I used to trap pigeons and then I'd sometimes eat them.
Okay, do you love jellyfish? We just spoke about jellyfish.
No. Because it's stinging and kills me.
All right.
Yeah, so that was, I don't know if we found it strange, but that's how we grew up, you know. We grew up making things like amageti, you know, and hit some birds with some stones. And then if we managed to get one, and then we just, you know, eat it, you know, fry it with some friends and eat. So from that venture, you know, I know at some point it was like you want to be a vet and then you eat pigeons. You know,
yeah.
Yeah, but for me it was more my childhood times. You know, yes, I would choose first. You know, which one I eat. I would eat the ones, the wild pets, the ones we usually call the mama positive. So
which ones are those ones?
The ones that the clear ones.
Oh, those ones that make that annoying sound.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I would catch those. They're very smart, you know. But it was difficult to catch. But I'll catch one and then I'll eat those ones. Then the domestic ones I'll just keep for myself.
Okay.
Because sometimes you used to brag with, you know, I've got the best pigeons, you know, I've got more nice pigeons. So it still happens. A lot of people do that, you know, even at home, we still have pigeons, a lot of them.
Do the tastes vary?
No.
Domestic ones? Sorry.
No, they're pretty much the same. You know, sometimes become innovative and put some spices and marinate. Yeah, and dry. We once made a braai. It was a long time ago, like 10 pigeons.
Oh, my goodness.
That is a lot.
I mean, it's like micro farming, you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
I consider it micro farming because, like, having chickens, you know.
Yeah.
If you have chickens at home, you might as well take one and eat, you know. So that's how we consider it. I've done a lot of projects around volunteering in the SPCA because I was part of the Johannesburg Student Council in 2011. But you choose a project as a way to engage to the community, and then you'll keep record of what you have done. So I used to go to the SPCA and volunteer there for some time. And then, so I found that journey interesting. And Yeah, at the time I was living my dream. Yeah, I was inspired because I would talk to the bears and ask them, how long did it take you? I said, I studied for 7 years.
Or, yeah.
7 years, okay. Yeah, if I have time, I don't mind going back and enrolling for that course just for fun of it.
Great. And it turns out that your love for human beings is just as great as your love for animals, because I know you have a non-profit Ghetto Nerds project or program that you run. Tell me about it.
Okay, so with Ghetto Nerds, how did it start? So when I was in high school, I've been a very active person adult, you know. I used to jump to opportunities if I see.
Sure.
So I used to participate also in tech competitions. So we'll be grouped in by our technology teacher, and then we'll be grouped and then we'll build projects using maybe recyclable material. And then we'll go to competitions and exhibit with other schools and get judged. So when other schools went there to present, they'll build awesome projects like robots, you know, cars that move on their own. RC cars, the one usually buys toys, but they'll build their own. So I asked myself, where did they get the resources, where did they get the knowledge, who taught them, who helped them, and then why didn't we have that? So I made, from there, that's what triggered me to continue to pursue the technology side of things, because I also loved technology at that time. So after I completed my course, I decided to start something. Since I've got the knowledge, let me go and plant it back in the hood, and then share the knowledge with other kids. The knowledge that we couldn't get, and then now we're making it accessible.
Sure.
So with Ghetto Nerds, that's why I started Ghetto Nerds, then to create a platform where learners can come and learn about new technology, robotics, programming, 3D printing, be tech safe, and incorporate that in their projects and improve, make learning fun again.
And when was this established?
Last year.
Last year?
Yeah.
Oh, great. And then the kind of people who come in, or who you expect to come into the program, what kind of people do you take in? Is it just anybody who walks in and is interested?
Okay, so we started, let me first how we started. We started by visiting the nearest schools. So the first one was the one I went to, Kadwanga Secondary School. So with the nearest schools, the nearest was also Mnube and Tatluhang, and one non-profit organization called Kutlwanong Center for Math, Science and Technology. So we went there to exhibit and show kids about what other technologies are there and how they can incorporate it with their studies. So at that time, we're only doing exhibitions. Mm-hmm. We haven't done like a full program where people can walk in and then and stuff. So I've been doing more proposals to be based in a school library, our local library. So yeah, that process has been started, but we haven't got to the stage where we finalize things. So we wanted a place whereby when kids or whoever wants to know about more about Ghetto Nerds, we say, come to this place. Sometimes you cannot do projects based in Soweto and then you are based in town.
Of course.
Then what you're doing won't be sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
We need people whereby they can get access to that on a daily basis. Even if a child comes out of school and said, after school I'm going to the library, then you're going to find us there and then to build on some cool robots and applications. So we haven't done like a full walk-in program, but the age group, currently we're focusing on high school learners, because at least those ones, they can grasp quick and is preparing towards them choosing their career path they want.
I just want to know if you have anything or anyone that motivates you, or rather if you have role models that you look up to.
I look up to a lot of people, I won't say specifically someone, because I learn a lot from people, I believe that you cannot do stuff alone, so I learn from other people, I'm inspired by other people's work, people motivate me, special family, my brothers do motivate me, even other people, innovators, from a very young age, we're inspired by other big guys like Bozoda 7 and stuff. So, those kind of people who bring change in the community, anyone who brings change and has a positive impact in the community. That's the kind of people I look up to.
Sure. And in one of your interviews, you said studying computer systems introduced you to another side of yourself that you're not aware of. Please tell me more about that as to, you know, what did you discover about yourself?
I discovered that I'm a maker, I'm an inventor. So how did that start? You know, I'm that person whereby I ask myself, if I learn something, how do I make use of it? So during my school days, varsity days, that time, on weekends I would experiment, you know. So I had this one machine that I had, the hair cutting machine. So it got broken, and I still loved it. I didn't want to throw it away. And then I did a little bit of research on how I can fix it. So I managed to convert that machine that plugs onto the wall socket to now plug into a computer. So I kind of designed it, you know, did a little bit of investigations. So from there I was like, did I manage to do this? And then I would just cut my hair, you know, plug into my computer.
So your computer powers up?
The machine.
The machine.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So from there, that is when I was like, oh, so if I can do this, what more can I do? Then
yeah.
I started to do more research. And then I think the most important was enjoy.
Mm.
Yeah, enjoying and loving what I did stimulated more creativity. And then because I also, when I do research, I see what other people are doing. And then, oh, okay. So if they manage to do this, I'll try to do that.
Yeah.
Differently, you know. So yeah, that's how I discovered.
All right. So I want to know, since you made this invention, I just want to know if people have started approaching you differently. How are the conversations going right now?
It's very interesting, you know, and scary at the same time.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, because I'm a techie, you know, so in my mind I'm thinking technological stuff, how to solve problems, what about this? And then try by all means to be humble. What scares me is that it changes the way people see you.
Yeah.
In my mind I'm like, I'm just a normal person. And then someone else will be like, yo, there's this guy, you know, yo, I was so inspired. It's great. Some other conversations where you get a call, someone would want to work with you. But then you don't know at what scale, you know. At the same time, you think about, I still need to focus. As much as there are new opportunities, you still need to maintain the focus and continue to what you started, you know. I've got that thing that you must finish what you started. So it's awesome, but it's scary at the same time. And then I try to always not to let it get into my head.
Right. And just for the last question for tonight, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?
That's a very interesting question, because I remember in 2013, I said the same thing, and then now I'm in a different place.
Yeah.
You know, so 5 years' time, where we can be. Try to push as much as we can. Try to innovate as much as we can. And
are you planning on studying any further?
Yes. Very, very, yeah. If even now I've been considering that. I did enroll last year, so this year I was like, I need to take a break, because all my life has been studies.
Okay.
Ever since. So this is like my first gap year ever since.
All right.
So yeah, I'm looking to continue to further studies. Obviously, I want to grow and be an expert. As Africa, we need experts.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So we need to study hard. As much as we're innovating, we're entrepreneurs, we need to be experts in particular fields. So I'm looking to be having at least a master's or a PhD, if I can. You
wow.
know. And then, yeah, business-wise, to grow, you know, create opportunities for the youth, make their future exciting.
Well, thank you so much. I'm not sure if Campion has another question.
No, I'm fine. It was interesting hearing.
Yeah, I'm left feeling very inspired, gobsmacked.
Absolutely.
To a certain extent. And really, I think this interview has been sort of eye-opening for me as well, where I'm just, you know, learning about so many other things, like you were mentioning, that, you know, as a person, you just need to, you know, keep reinventing yourself. And also the statement that you just made, that, I mean, with the knowledge that I have, how can I make use of it? It's not enough to just, you know, come to work, do whatever you need to do and get out. But how else can it work for the betterment of other people as well? But thank you so much for making time for us this evening on the Science Insight.
No, it's my pleasure.
Okay. Well, that was it from Nkululeko Tunzi. We return after the break.
This is the Science Inside.
We had Nkululeko Tunzi before the break. He is a computer systems graduate from TUT. And we were just simply going through what he's been working on, what he has been doing, and how far he is with his project and the walking aid that he has designed and developed for blind people. It was really an insightful interview, one that I've learned quite a lot from. And yeah, he's not only a techie, he's a social activist, a business person. He's also a young person who's looking to see that other young people are also elevated or empowered, and I find that really refreshing to have young people like him who think in such a way. But that is where we leave the show for tonight. And yeah, thank you to our featured guest who was on the show tonight, Nkululeko Tunzi. And today's team behind the scenes is production by Masibulele Lunika, Campion Zarima, and tech by Kutlwano Serame. Our podcast is on vits.journalism.co.za/science and on iTunes as well. On social media, you can find us as Facebook and on Twitter as VowFM. And you can hashtag Science Inside. The Science Inside is produced by the Wits Radio Academy, funded in part by the South African Department of Science and Technology. That is all for tonight. Good night.
The Science Inside Podcast.